Unified with Momobo Ogoro. This is News Talk.
Welcome back to another episode of Unified. My name is Momobo Ogoro, and this is the show where we listen, learn, laugh, and ultimately unify across our differences. If you're new to the show is where we meet people from different and diverse communities all over Ireland and hear their stories and perspectives. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by emailing unified@newstalk.com. That's unified with a Y-O-U. Coming up on today's show, we'll be discussing the power of movement and how it's used as a tool for inclusion with Active Disability Ireland. We'll learn exactly what ballroom culture is and its history when it comes to the queer community. And lastly, in the social scene, we'll be hearing about conversational English classes taking place around the country with Falcha Ishchak. But first, what does it take to make active, healthy living accessible to everyone? Across Ireland, disability services are rethinking what's possible. Movement beyond care models to create opportunities for people to build confidence, independence, friendships, and stronger connections with their community. Joining me now is Active Disability Ireland CEO Brenda O'Donnell and their Strategic Operations Manager Stephanie McSweeney to discuss the changing landscape of inclusive health and how small changes in services can make lasting impact. Hi, ladies. How are you?
Hi, we're good. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Great.
So, Brenda, can you tell me about specifically what physical activity, what can it do in terms of creating a sense of independence for those who have disabilities?
Yeah, so I suppose our organisation has worked very closely with people with disabilities for the last near 20 years. And the impact for us across that sector is it's giving them the independence to be active. What it looks like is giving them the opportunity so that they have opportunities to be able to do it. And I suppose for a long time, what our organisation recognised is that the opportunities weren't always there. So I suppose the overall concept for our organisation is about the provision of those opportunities to be available to everybody at an opportunity that they choose to do them at. So for us, I suppose the impact and what it looks like is opportunity at community level, empowerment of somebody being able to actually choose what that looks like for them and having the decision to be able to do it themselves.
That's super important. And Stephanie, and Brenda talks about the community level opportunity. What does that actually look like tangibly?
So we work very closely with the network of local sports partnerships in Ireland. So there's 29 across the country. And within those, there is a sport inclusion disability officer. So the programmes that we run and a lot of the work that we do links in very closely with the sport inclusion disability officers. And it creates a sense of connection between the individual in the community setting and, you know, an advocate as such within a local sector that can support them to become more active by signposting them to opportunities of, you know, inclusive clubs or inclusive activities or potentially different groups or gyms even that might be available to them. So that local connection is really, really important. That community integration is really important. We also then work with a lot of clubs on a local level to create more inclusive environments for them. So we have a lot of guidance and resources that they can take on board that they could implement in their club structures to create that more inclusive environment for people with disabilities to get involved. And I suppose one thing that's quite important to note is that it's not always the participant either. Like, you know, if you have a disability, you could still volunteer, you could become the coach, you could become the match report writer, the official, the referee. So there is a role for everybody in sport, and it's just trying to find your place within that.
And that's like a mindset shift to thinking about how people can actively participate in sports and activities if you don't have a disability. Mm. And I suppose it's been a shift when it comes to disability services over the years. Brenda, can you kind of explain to us how those services has evolved to today?
Yeah, within the services, I suppose that cultural piece is a massive part of, I suppose we have an overall program called Accessible. Mm-hmm. But in essence, what it is it's about that cultural awareness of what sport looks like, what the opportunities look like, and getting people to change their habits insofar as, you know, small changes make big impact is one of our hashtags. But it's around looking at changing the mindset of perhaps the staff that work within the services, the managers within the services, the overall ethos of groups that are providing services, is just getting them to think a little bit differently, that it doesn't have to be just, say, perhaps a physio-led exercise session. What does, you know, getting somebody outside for 5 minutes, whether it's moving in a chair or whether it's moving on a stroller, but it's about just changing the mindset.
And how does that mindset change?
Well, I suppose we have a sports inclusion disability charter, mm-hmm. and a lot of our programs are based, this is the backbone of what we base it on. And in 2018, it was developed by people with disabilities, helping to identify five main areas of openness, looking at people, facilities, activities and promotion. And within those five headings, then we get organisations to consider what that looks like for them. So simple, being open, have a clear and, have an open mindset as to what, what it looks like for somebody with a disability to try and take part. Are the staff within your service trained? Do they have an understanding of what physical activity may look like? Do they have an understanding of our training, language, terminology, the barriers that people face? And I think when we start introducing that concept to people, when it's not on your doorstep or you're not thinking about it really every day because there's no barriers for you, that identification of actually the small challenges of just getting in a door could be a big challenge for somebody. Looking at getting people to look at the facilities. So, we work with a lot of organisations that actually just keep booking the same venues because that's what they've done. And, we might throw a little question out. Well, actually, do they have a lift? Do they have an accessible toilet? Do they have, is a car park facilities? And when they start looking at these, you're going, actually, we need to think somewhere else. And it's all of these little things, when you put them together, build up to kind of go, if we change one little thing here, it's a big culture. It's a cultural change. We always say promotion, even though it's last on the list, is probably the biggest piece.
And promotion in what sense?
Promotion of the activities that they do. Mm-hmm. So if we've worked with many organisations down through the years, and we've often heard, we're going, oh, we're doing really great work. And we're going, well, are you sharing that? Are you promoting it out to the sector that you want there? And it could be a simple image on a flyer, or it could be simple wording to make it more inclusive. And collectively, I think when they start looking at all of those five headings together, they begin, that mindset change begins to happen.
And it's a slow process, I'd imagine.
It is a slow process. I suppose if we look at the governing body side of things, we work with all the national governing bodies, mm-hmm. the sport, the local sports partnerships, as Stephanie said, and it's a journey. We don't put a timeline on any organisation to have, you need to, it's a stage process. You can't get to this stage in 6 months. We all say, if it takes 6 months or it takes six mm-hmm. years or it takes 1 year, it's how fast you can make the changes yourself. But understand that money, infrastructure, capacity, people all weigh into this.
And I imagine it's kind of like working with like two sides of a coin. Let's say you're working with organizations and institutions that are creating the environment, but then at the same time, you're working with those individuals that have the disabilities that yes. need to be accommodated, and it's not vast enough for a lot of these people. So
we always try to say, we're working with organisations to be culturally more aware. Mm-hmm. Then we work with just a local community and local mm-hmm. sports. And I suppose we're always, I use my hands quite a lot insofar as I say, we try to get them both to meet so that the governing bodies themselves are taking on the whole ethos of inclusion and culture. But the awareness, I suppose, and Stephanie mentioned it earlier on, it's getting people with disabilities to realise that these opportunities also mm-hmm. exist for them. And until that awareness piece is kind of fully recognised, there'll always be a gap.
Yeah.
And I know we have stats here in relation to the gradient around participation. 52% of the Irish population are active. However, with disability, it's only 32% of people with disabilities are active. So there's a 20% gradient there that we're always trying to kind of bridge that gap. But it's around awareness and promotion and understanding for people with disabilities to understand that actually they can do it. And it doesn't have to be the traditional high competitive sport. It can be a version of activity and movement.
And it's important to kind of, like you said, bridge that gap and close that barrier. And I know you've created or you're part of the Active Healthy Me programme. Stephanie, what is that? And what was the philosophy behind it?
Yeah, so this is a programme that is funded through the HSE and supported by Sport Ireland. And it's effectively like a six-moduled health and wellbeing kind of programme, I suppose, that is delivered through Disability Day Services in Ireland. At the moment, we have close to 600 services involved in that programme. And it's an educational kind of module. So it kind of teaches the individuals, the importance of physical activity, the benefits of physical activity, the basics around nutrition, hydration, goal setting and different things like that. So it kind of gives them a real foundation, knowledge and understanding of, the benefits to activity and the physical activity We do have kind of that community integration piece that connects in as well too, and about the fourth module where they are tasked to actually find something within their local area that, you know, actually engages them and that they're not just taking part within their service, because we want to integrate into the local communities. So there is an outreach piece around the fourth module where they have to connect with their local sports partnership and into their inclusion officer and find a local opportunity to participate. And like, we can see the impact.
Can you give me examples of local opportunities?
Yeah, so it could just be something quite simple like a local walking group. It could be, you know, a gym that's hosting like an open day for people to come and try their facilities. There could be a football for all group that's being set up, or an all-inclusive, you know, athletics camp or something like that. So there's a variety of different things that are happening there. And as Brenda mentioned, because we're so closely linked to the local or to the national governing bodies of sport, we also have that kind of inside knowledge as to what programs are being facilitated, and we can help signpost as well too, to make sure that people, you know, are aware of those different things that are happening. But yeah, there's been huge buy-in, I suppose, from the HSE in particular and from the day services. So we're continuously looking to develop that programme even further, developing new content, new resources, new exercise videos, new materials. We have a recent collaboration actually that's just being launched shortly with Athletics Ireland, and it is called the I Move 2 programme. So that's about, you know, you might have completed the Active Healthy Me programme where you've got your baseline and your foundational knowledge around physical activity and, you know, the benefits of that. And you may want to take that into the next phase of that journey for somebody. So the I Move 2 program is kind of like a run, walk or roll program, looking at trying to increase somebody's capacity to be able to move to maybe a 2 or 3 or even maybe a 5K, journey, I suppose. And it's a really exciting collaboration that we have coming up, and we hope to see more of those come in the future as well with other governing bodies.
That's so important to have that sort of stepping up. So you have the basics from the basic program, and then you move up into that. Like, I don't even know if I can do a 5K at this point, but it's important for people to get that encouragement. And it sounds like it's like really empowering as well, not just in terms of community integration,
absolutely,
but also for self-empowerment as well. Yeah. So really well done on that. And I want to ask you, you've gotten a lot of support from like local sports clubs and community organizations. How has that been in terms of managing those relationships, Stephanie?
Yeah, I guess we're a small team. We only have a handful of staff, and we have 2 different offices across the country, but we are nationally based. Okay. So we rely quite heavily on collaboration, on partnership, on working together, you know, and actually working particularly with a lot of other disability sport organisations as well too, to make sure that, you know, we're all moving in the same direction. We wouldn't be as strong as we are if it wasn't for a lot of those collaborations and partnerships. So it's fundamental really for us.
And that's... collaboration is key to any sort of like social impact and participating with people at different levels, government level, local level, community level, to really ensure it. And it ultimately creates those benefits for the people that's, or your beneficiaries, the people that you want to impact. Brenda, what are those benefits of just like living a healthy, active life? Most people know it for themselves, but particularly for those who are disabled, what is the benefits?
I think the biggest word that came out of the awards the last day were connectedness, you know, connecting with other people that perhaps you're not normally in their circle, friendship and social opportunities. And I think, you know, a lot of them said is that it's not always about the physical activity and the fitness. It's just about that connection with other people. We're currently doing a little bit of research on empowerment. You know, what does it look like for somebody with a disability to be empowered within their local community? So we're hoping to kind of nail down, you know, key concept of what we need to do as an organisation to help individuals out there to be a little bit more empowered in this whole space of physical activity opportunity. But I think what it looks like to us is that it's more than physical activity. It's connection, social, community, friends, family being involved and being part of something bigger, being part of something that you're not normally part of, and knowing that you can do it.
And it's that empowerment piece, like you were saying, is so crucially important for people to, it's exactly like you said, knowing that you can do it, and knowing for the people around you that may not have disabilities that you can do it too.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way street. And I suppose you were talking about the awards there. Stephanie, do you want to give us a brief of what the awards are and why they are so important?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Disability Service Awards that we host every 2 years is kind of a culmination of celebration, really. So any of the services that are attending the awards that either get shortlisted or you know, win in their categories have come through the programme of the Active Healthy Me programme. So they do have the baseline fundamentals of the programme, and they've implemented that within their services. They've then gone on to, I suppose, demonstrate different kind of initiatives that they've taken up as that next step, you know, within their service. So, you know, one particular service may decide that they have a particular interest in the nutrition aspect, and they might have set up like a cookery class or something within their service that kind of, you know, embeds a lot of those learnings a little bit further. Others might have set up, you know, a hiking group or a walking group or whatever it might be. So I suppose across the awards themselves that we recognise, you know, 8 different category winners. And within that, there's a couple of different nominations, you know, some within the outdoor space, some within the community space. We have a male and female champion. We have a senior management team kind of champion. So there's a number of different awards that are kind of categorised there. But we've had, I suppose, this year, the largest number of entries that we've had ever, which is fantastic to see. And we've got the largest number of services involved in the Active Healthy Me programme as well, too. As part of this year, we also launched a colouring and drawing competition for the services, too. So again, activity can be in any form or any format that, you know, is suitable for each individual. So we said that we do a little bit of a creative take on it as well this year. And we had, I think we had probably 200 entries or close to that for the colouring competition and art competition as well too. So it was just trying to engage with the services, engage with the individuals within those services, and also then to promote and profile the work that they're doing. So it was a fantastic day of celebration, a real energy in the room.
I think if there's one real example of, I suppose, when you talk about the impact and what it means to people, is that there was one individual, I think he won male champion.
Jim.
And Jim was the epitome of what our programme is trying to do, insofar as that Jim joined Active Healthy Me just wanting to run and get involved in whether it was a local running club. But actually, Jim has gone on to run marathons now as a result of just setting some goals for himself and identifying that this is where he'd like to go. He obviously was very lucky to have a really good support staff with him that actually ran the marathons with him. And for us, that was just the epitome of where, okay, he wasn't doing anything like that before he identified what his goals were or doing Active Healthy Me. He learned a little bit about what it is to do physical activity and now is actually running Dublin, London, all of these marathons. And it's just amazing to us. We're kind of going, wow, if that's impact, that's impact, you know, and that just shows where somebody learned a little bit about themselves and what they could do and is leading by example for us in showing us what the possibilities are.
And it's really the case that sometimes people just need that nudge. Absolutely. And their life trajectory can just, that's just the beauty of impact.
Yeah.
Like they just need a nudge and you've created that space for your people to just transform their lives. And the award just sounds like a beautiful national celebration and congratulations on the uptake of it, because it just sounds, one, administratively overwhelming, but in terms of the practice itself, it just sounds fantastic. And I know it's that national reach that you've had, but in Brendan, compared to like other countries, where is Ireland at in terms of sports and disability inclusion?
Yeah, I'd like to say that Ireland is probably one of the lead countries insofar as that we're doing a lot in relation to inclusion, and we have a really good, I suppose, system. When you look at the national governing bodies of sport, most of those organisations are now identifying individuals to work with them that are looking at inclusion. And inclusion across a broad spectrum sometimes, but also identifying, some of our NGBs have now sport inclusion disability officers. So their focus is beginning to become more tuned. We have the network of local sports partnerships across 29 local sports partnerships or SIDOs in place. But we work closely with just some of our international counterparts, Scotland, England, Wales, Disability Sport, Northern Ireland. And I suppose a lot of the time we feel that we're sharing. We're sharing a lot of what we're doing. We're also learning from them. But insofar as that, I suppose we have been invited to national and international conference to share the work that we're doing across programmes, profiling Active Healthy Me, programming, profiling accessible. So in regards, we always say we have an awful lot more to do, but we're a good bit ahead of the stall when it comes to a lot of our European counterparts.
That's fantastic.
And sharing the learnings is, you know, we don't mind sharing because it's, you know, replicate. We've shared it across the waters in Australia and New Zealand as well, where we're happy for them to take our resources and just adapt and form to their terminology and language. So as we say, we're always learning, we're always developing, but fundamentally it comes back to asking people with disabilities, you know, we will never do anything or develop anything unless it's got a say from people with disabilities. And they keep us on the straight and narrow insofar as that we have our training, we have research, we have our strategy, but it's all led and formed by people with disabilities. So they're the stall makers for us insofar as that, I suppose, we're ahead of the game insofar as that we're asking people, what should we be doing here?
And that participatory approach is what's going to, it's transformative in terms of delivering impact, because it's not arbitrary. It's like, okay, this is actually what the people are saying. So thank you so much again, folks. That was Brenda O'Donnell and Stephanie McSweeney from Active Disability Ireland joining me. Up next, we'll learn about the ballroom culture in Ireland and its fascinating origins. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to Unified. Now, from New York's underground queer scene to a growing movement here in Ireland, ballroom is far more than dance, performance, or even the voguing scene that you see on Madonna's video. It's a culture that is built on creativity, a chosen family, resilience, and self-expression. So on today's show on What's Your Story, we'll be chatting to Tino Scabarelli, who's the founder of the House of Scabarelli, Ireland's first Black queer-led ballroom collective. They'll be here to explore the history of ballroom culture and why creating spaces for people in this space is truly important to create that sense of belonging. Welcome, Tino. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So, Tino, you're the founder of the House of Scabarelli. You're the founder of the first Black queer-led ballroom collective. Now, what is ballroom culture to someone who's new and listening?
So I think you summed it up pretty well, but what I would say is that ballroom culture is an underground dance subculture, which has made its way from, like you said, 80s New York, to put it simply, and they existed as alternative family structures where queer people of color would have been ostracized and disowned by their families. So you have house mothers, house fathers, and under these houses, people perform in competitions or gather under events called balls. And there is the competitive scene. And what I would love to foster with my house, which is the Kiki scene. So Kiki is like, you know, like in Irish, I'd say that would be like crack, you know, just for fun.
That's beautiful. And like, why did you get involved in ballroom culture?
Yeah. So before getting involved in ballroom culture, I had actually been organizing within the community within Black queer community for about 3-4 years at least before that. And, you know, I was very, you know, about direct action and social justice, but there comes a time where you burn out as an activist and organizer. And I wanted to bring people together through spaces of levity and, you know, through events, like, which is something that I would be interested in. And so I did my research and on similar joyous spaces that, you know, do advance representation and the rights of queer people of color, but also provide that much needed space of levity that I was just chatting about. So yeah, like that's how I got involved in ballroom, and it all kind of snowballed from there.
And it's a beautiful thing to hear how you kind of used your story as an activist and needing a space for community recollection and a space for joy to create that for other people. And I know particularly, like you said earlier, the ballroom scene was a space for Black queer people in the New York in the 80s to come together when they were being ostracized. Why is it important for the Black queer community here in Ireland?
I don't think I need to really go into what has been happening lately in Ireland. But, you know, to like sum it up on a systemic level, there's rise in hate crimes against minoritized individuals of all types, queer people, people of color, disabled people, women, like all of those categories of people. And so I think we're feeling a real tension within Ireland right now and even globally. And I think that, you know, these sorts of spaces are really important for, again, like I say, levity, but also in self-actualization, because traditionally the categories and the ethos of having houses and parents and being raised, so-called, you know, is to prepare you for the world out there through creating this this perfect like silo, you know, where people can feel safe and it's the training ground for out there. So I think that this space is very relevant to what's happening with regards to the far right, and also needing that space of representation, empowerment, self-actualization.
And that's super, super important, a space where people can just be free in themselves. And I know you mentioned the concept of houses. I know ballroom culture is a whole culture in itself, and there's a lot of terms that people may not be aware of. So you mentioned mm-hmm. like houses and house mothers and all these kind of things. First and foremost, what is a house?
So basically, a house is not a physical building. I like the word collective. That you would say, and back in the day, and still, you know, it is a continuing legacy, but more so back in the day, we had, you know, the house mothers and house fathers, which would be older members of the queer community, and more likely, you know, trans women of color taking on the role of the caretaking, nurturing a role and emotional labor role of raising literal children, as it were, like back in the day, like when there were children who were ostracized. I think like nowadays, like, you know, a lot of, or I would even argue most of participants in the ballroom are fully grown adults. Right. So there is not so much of that, so much of that relationship of resourcing and such, but more so as creative mentors and, you know, and the like. It's a collective of people who are under the tutelage of people who are maybe more experienced in ballroom or certain aspects of ballroom, like for me, like executive. And they bond over this dance subculture and together. And there's very much that creative, a family of creative people, if it were.
It sounds what I'm hearing from you is that it sounds the house is kind of like a family of people who, generally speaking, are queer or LGBTQ plus that have mm-hmm. come together. And quite frankly speaking, being queer myself, like when you're mm-hmm. in your normal quote unquote family structure, there may be times, and especially with someone of African descent, there may be times where cannot be your full self. So mm-hmm. this house mm-hmm. or this collective is a space where you can be your full self. But then mm-hmm. you have less a house mother or house father from the queer community that is a mentor mm-hmm. or a coach that can support mm-hmm. you in a safe environment. And it's great that you've created that space for those who are in your house and created mm-hmm. these spaces where other people can join, aka the ballroom. But for mm-hmm. those who've like never been to a ballroom or a ball, what is the mm-hmm. atmosphere like?
We've scaled up since starting. So very much, you know, we were getting people into the, you know, habit of just being able to walk on stage. You know, we Irish people were very shy. And so it was very much about, you know, empowering people to like get up there and, you know, make themselves known. And while that is still the energy and everyone is supportive and, you know, if you would say want to walk on the runway, we're still very much open with regards to anyone, provided that they're following the categories, can walk. And it is like, yeah, like I said, supportive, but as we're scaling up, we're getting a little bit more strict, you know, which I think adds to the dynamic aspect of ballroom, because we're adding TEMS, we're adding CHOPS, which is, you know, politely asking the person who has decided to take up space on the runway to leave the runway, whether it's because they're not following the rubric of the category, or the technique isn't right, or, you know, if it's a runway category, there's just a detail missing. So we are really very much trying to put ourselves in line with, you know, international ballroom standards, but having that like specific Irish crowd, supportive and positive experience, and, you know, just a space where you can really express yourself. And yeah, so that's what you should expect. And lots of pomp is what I'd say the House of Schiaparelli specializes in. But I think you'll find that as more houses crop up, each house will have their own style and their different expectations for their audiences.
That's so beautiful. And it's a beautiful thing to have people express themselves in the ballrooms. But again, you run a strict regimen in terms of how they engage with each category. So what I was hearing from you is that the ballroom is like a convening of people, and there are categories in which people can walk, but you have to be on it, essentially, unless you're chopped.
Yes.
That's beautiful. And specifically, there are misconceptions. Like, I've had conversations with people and we talk about ballroom culture and they think it's just like Madonna and voguing and people dancing Vogue that you see on TV and stuff like that. But what are the misconceptions when it comes to ballroom?
Yeah, I think that the misconceptions is, there are many misconceptions. But I think that people think that it is only about the dance-up culture. And I know that I've been saying that a lot just as shorthand. But, you know, there are runway categories. There are, let's say, realness categories as well. Like, there's bizarre, which I personally think that Irish people would really do well in, which is basically just looking odd with your costuming. And no, it's just from our history of Samhain and, you know, and costuming, and we have a really big, you know, design culture and grassroots DIY culture. So I really think that, you know, there is a signature for the Irish ballroom scene that I can see cropping up. So yeah, like, I would get that, you know, that's a misconception that I think that, you know, needs to be cleared up, is that you need to be this like virtuoso in dancing, but there are loads of different ways to get involved, and like from the music production aspect of things and dancing, like I said, but also in runway categories and in costuming and fashion categories as well. So I think that there is, like, you know, an air of elitism that I do want to challenge, because at the end of the day, ballroom was created for, you know, people with little means and very few resources. And it's really much, very much about community skill swapping and sharing. So it goes beyond just the ball itself.
And it's important to highlight that it started from people who were ostracized, low income, black, queer, disabled. So it needs to be, the foundation needs to be remembered. And I know you have an upcoming event. Can you let us know a bit more about that?
Yeah, we have a few things going on right now. So July 10th, we have our first solo club night, which is really about getting people familiar with the music of ballroom. And don't worry, like, this is a pride sort of motive, so none of the intensity that I was speaking to. Just come on down, listen to some tunes, meet some people in the community, in the growing community. It'll be fun. Joey is going to be playing and RJ the DJ, and our very own mother is going to be opening. So beautiful. And the ball, which people keep asking me about, is on July 30th. And I think I feel comfortable enough to reveal the theme.
What's the theme?
which is the Gabal, so GAA. I'm really about creating that Black Irish scene. So was debating on whether to do World Cup, but, you know, this is our national sport, and dress code is going to be sports editorial. So, you know, can't just come in your own heels. So, but I'd still love to see it. Categories will be out soon. And yeah, just keep your notifications on.
That's fantastic. And it's people kind of rooting for their old GAA jerseys to come in vogue. That's a unique blend that I've never seen before. And I suppose when it comes to the future of ballroom culture in Ireland, like, you're an innovator, you've started it here, you're building a community of events, of a collective, the houses, being the house father and everything like that. What is your hope for the culture?
My hope is that, and it's already happening, really, it's like that other black and brown queer people are creating their houses and putting their own signature. Like, I recently went to the Orisha's Ball, which was the inaugural ball of the House of Saints, which is run by a trans femme Afro-Brazilian. And I'm just really so happy that, like, there's momentum in this. And it isn't just me, like, you know, but it's always great to be acknowledged. And yeah, like, I want my legacy to be the godfather of Irish ballroom. And as well, like, having it be specifically Black Irish ballroom. So, you know, not trying to replicate other scenes, but really looking into the material conditions and the, you know, of the people in our scene to create a new scene, like, you know, in ballroom, and something that is, that presents a signature for ballroom worldwide.
Well, Tino, you're creating a massive cultural shift here in Ireland. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Tino. Again, folks, that's Tino Schiaparelli, who is the founder of the House of Schiaparelli, for sharing their story and giving us a fascinating insight to the history, the community, the culture, the creativity of the ballroom culture here in Ireland. After the break, we'll hear more about how migrant communities are enjoying learning conversational English. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to Unified. Now, learning a new language is about more than just words. It's about finding confidence, making connections, and feeling like home. Simple conversations are helping people from around the world to build new lives here in Ireland. Through an initiative called Falcho Shock, they're providing English conversational classes in a warm and welcoming environment. So now I'm joined by volunteer coordinator Joy O'Connell and a learner from Ukraine, Tatiana, who are going to talk to us about Falcho Shock. Welcome, ladies. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're doing good.
Good. Awesome.
Yeah, good.
Now, Joy, can you explain to me what the Falcho Shock initiative is and why it's important for those who never heard about it?
Yeah. So Falcho Shock we're a national community-based organization. We offer conversational English classes to speakers of other languages. We're free. We operate, I suppose, right now we operate in all 26 counties with, I think, 266 locations across Ireland. And it's been growing and growing and growing over the past number of years with more need for this type of service, you know. So we're volunteer led. There's over 3,000 volunteers across the Republic that volunteer week in, week out with Falcho Shock. And they can come from all kind of backgrounds, all walks of life. But it's really about more than just language learning. So we offer language support for learners of all levels. So some people might come to us with very little to no English. Some people might have more kind of intermediate to advanced English and want to kind of work on their confidence skills. But it's more than just about that. We really kind of open up a welcoming space for learners to help them kind of build connection in their local community and kind of empower them to be more confident in their interactions.
That's
in everyday
so
life.
Important. And like, language is such a huge tool for, and when it's your native language, you don't think about it.
Yeah.
It's such a huge tool for connection, for community, for integration, especially when you're coming to a new country.
Yeah.
And Tatiana, can you tell us a bit more about your story and how you started to learn English?
I studied English only in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Before Ireland, I don't speak. I knew only a few words. First time I went to English classes, grammar, culture, Irish culture. And then I went to Salgard conversation class. I remember my first volunteer, Anne. She was very friendly. I remember your smile. it was very good.
Oh, that's really good. And it sounds like it's more than just the English. It's the people involved and it's the community. And Joy, can you tell us, like, why conversational English and not like formal business English, because people want to get jobs and stuff like that?
Well, I think the Fáilte Seach model is, I mean, it's quite informal and relaxed. First of all, we're learner led. So if a learner comes to us and has something specific that they would like to work on, our volunteers will generally, will go with what they ask. But when it's more formal, it's less an environment where you can kind of foster building those real kind of community connections. So like, for example, in our area in Sagart, we have a lovely, vibrant multicultural community. And it means that our kind of model, I might be out, I live in the area as well. So I might be out and see Tatiana in the street. And it just builds that really kind of welcoming environment for people to integrate more kind of successfully.
That's so important, that yeah. welcoming environment, because it is scary migrating in the first place. Whether it's for your own sake or you are forced to migrate,
yeah.
it's very scary to be in a new environment. And Tatiana, I want to ask you, like, when it comes to the differences between Ireland and Ukraine, what are the differences from your experience?
My important experience is Irish people. They're very funny. They very friendly. They going easy. I like experience place in Ireland, after then I go to conversation class. My volunteer, now she is my friend, and showed me more place, beautiful place. She met me with Irish culture. She met me with hurling. I was hurling much. We was a big group, wow. an organization group. And I saw how passionately Irish people support their team.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And it sounds like it's very rewarding, not just learning the language, but experience the culture.
Yeah, it's not only classes. It's like a family.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think it's very important to build that, like you said, community connections and family. And for you, Joy, what's so rewarding about being a volunteer?
Well, initially, I kind of noticed a need in the area as the area became more built up, like a lot of places in Dublin, that there was more and more people coming in with English as a second language. And I suppose myself and a group of other volunteers decided that it would be really good if they met people from the local community, just to build connections with them. They're part of our community. So like, I would leave my own house and say hello to my neighbour, it would be the same thing, you know. So, yeah. So with Fáilte Seach, it really is our model. Language is important. You need language to survive in a culture or a country. But just as important, it's about building those connections, you know, and making people feel welcome. And at the other side, on the other side of it, it's like our volunteers are, you know, it's hugely rewarding for our volunteers, for myself included, because we get to make those connections. And I think it's very important nowadays in a kind of increasingly busy country, city culture, that we make those connections with others.
Yeah. Those connections are so important for even local communities as well, and the micro communities to come together to even break through misconceptions or misunderstandings, yeah. and just learn about the different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really what I'm hearing from you, Tatiana, and your story is you've built a lot of confidence in learning English. And can you tell me, What are the classes like, or the conversations like with Fáilte Isteach?
I usually come back to class with joy. They're very friendly atmosphere. It helped me learn English. I learn English with people know their country. First time we learn a small group, face to face. After then we go to for a cup of tea and talk big group. Tell about food, about a country, about our discovery in island. It's a very, it's atmosphere very funny, very joy. It's very friendly.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And it sounds like something that anybody can go to, and the confidence, because it's difficult learning a new language. It's very difficult. So you need a friendly, confident environment. Like I'm learning Spanish, and sometimes when they say, you say like a word and they're like, yeah, you did it. I'm like, oh my God, thank you. You need the confidence to learn a new language, and especially if you're a new environment. And for those who are listening, Joy, how can people get involved if they want to connect with their community and support in conversational English?
Well, there are a number of ways. If you live in an area that doesn't have a Fáilte Isteach class and you are willing to coordinate that group, you can contact Fáilte Isteach, and you'll easily find the website and talk to the team there, and they will kind of guide you in terms of setting up a class. Lots of support from the Fáilte Isteach team. And since we've been involved with Fáilte Isteach, it has grown really, really, really grown. Or if you would like to volunteer, you can also get in touch with the Fáilte Isteach team or Google your local area and see if they need volunteers. But yeah, in general, people will find something to do. And because the model is, you know, some people, we find that some people want to come and they want to work through grammar, and that's fine. But we hope that the model kind of reflects one that is kind of more natural kind of learning, in that you hear different accents. We always talk about accents in our classes, and sometimes our accents can be tough for people from other cultures.
I have one of my best friends, she's like C2, completely fluent in English.
Yeah.
Still cannot decide.
Yeah.
Cork accent.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard.
So it really does give that opportunity to, you know, if you're living in that area and you meet somebody from the area, you meet somebody with the accent, and it really helps in that way.
Super important. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for coming on the show. It really goes to show how much not just language is needed, but community connection, that sense of integration between communities and belonging. And Fáilte Isteach is really doing that at the grassroots level with the volunteers to create that connection. So thank you for the work that you all do. Again, folks, that is Joy and Tatiana coming from Sagart, Fáilte Isteach. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of Unified, supported by Commission Amann. You can find us on podcast on the Go Loud app and share your thoughts at unified@newstalk.com. Thank you to Marais O'Sullivan for producing and Aisha Niavit on research. Join us again next week for another episode of Unified, Sundays at 8 p.m. on Newstalk. We'll see you then.